everyone. Welcome to Reach Higher Riverside, where we share all Reach Higher stories happening in the greatest county in the nation. My name is Priscilla Grijalva, and I work at the best high school in the world. On today's podcast, we have an interview with Derek Francis. He's an amazing school counselor who's the manager of counseling services for the Office of College and Career Readiness for Minneapolis Public Schools. He also has amazing webinars on the Mesa Cloud website. I love talking to Derek today. We both share a passion for helping students, school counseling, and just loving people where they're at. Today, there was an Ask a Virtual Town Hall on racism in schools. Derek was part of that amazing panel. ASCA has mandated we do this work for a long time. It's our responsibility to understand where our students are coming from. This is not temporary work. Our profession was trained to do the work, and we should do the work. We have to actively work against racism in schools. In order to be ethical, we have to do the work. Carolyn Stone stated, "We can't walk into school in August as business as usual." Derek stated, "We are modeling for our kids. Know we all make mistakes. Model empathy. We need to listen, learn, and do the work." I also wanted to remind everyone, there has never been a more important time to make sure everyone you know that is eligible to vote is registered to vote. We hope you guys enjoy this episode.
Well, we'll go ahead and start. If you could introduce yourself and maybe talk about how you became a school counselor.
Yeah, sure. Awesome. My name is Derek Francis, and I'm the manager of counseling services for Minneapolis Public Schools. I've been in this role for a little over a year, and I've been a school counselor total for 9 years. So I just finished year 8 and I'm starting year 9. And so that is a little bit about me, how I became a school counselor. Actually, my undergrad is in broadcast communications. I wanted to be a news anchor, actually.
That's awesome.
And I wanted to be a news anchor and cover sports. So I figured that would be kind of like my passion. I loved sports growing up. I loved watching Ahmad Rashad and different commentators. And so I was like, that's what I want to do. And during undergrad, I volunteered through a scholarship that I had earned with the Page Foundation. And so during my time volunteering, I just loved making connections with students. And from there, I was like, you know what? During my senior year, I had more excitement going to my volunteer site than doing my communications internship. And I was like, okay, there's something going on here. And so when I graduated, I started supporting an education company that had resources for high school counselors called Student Paths. And so I'd go out and deliver these lessons. And I was like, this is super fun. It's like I'm working with older kids now. And some of the counselors, they were like, you should go into school counseling. So long story short, I was like, sure, I love working with kids. I'm not sure how the communications, broadcasting career is going to go. Let me get my master's in counseling. And I fell in love with the program. And just I fell in love with students just wanting to talk with me. My presence at a school, they're like, wow, there's a black guy here. And they weren't used to seeing educators of color. And they're like, he's talking to me about college. And so many students would just gravitate towards my energy and my vibe and my passion to work with them. So started at North High in Minneapolis once I graduated. Loved it because it's right here in the city that I grew up in. And then I went to Champlain Park High School, where I went to high school at. And then now I'm back in Minneapolis.
Oh, that's awesome. And the communications helped because you're great with leading your webinars and everything that you're doing to help school counselors.
Yeah.
Can you talk about what it's like growing up black in America?
Yeah, it is unique. It's so much about just understanding the messaging that comes in. For me, as an African-American man, black male in America, be mindful of the historical pieces, so the historical messages that are out there. For me, I was blessed with having parents that really pushed me to understand that I have value and worth and that I need to work hard because they were hard workers. And so I had to make sure to listen to that voice and narrative and upbringing, but also balance out the times where I'd see messaging around people of color not feeling the most supported or cared about, or dealing with microaggressions in school or in the community. So it's that balance of, goodness, I have this awesome upbringing from my parents, but also I see realities of discrimination in school, or seeing my colleagues or peers that don't feel supported by the education system. So that's the dilemma. And that's the part where I see a real impact by with educators, where we can reach in and step in and support students that feel marginalized. And I also realize helping to realize what opportunities there are as an African-American male in America, as a person in America, student growing up, knowing that education is really impactful for getting to where I'm at, having that value in it. And it helped from having educators show me and encourage me to put that value in going to college and getting my master's and being a counselor. So that's been my experience. I definitely am aware that there's a lot of microaggressions and struggles that people face, but I really want to do the work and see counselors as doing the work to encourage them to push through.
Yeah, we got a ton of questions from our listeners, so we're going to go down the list. Some of our listeners had a variety of questions, and some of them may be tough questions. So I think they're great. So I think it's important that people understand these questions. And some of them were even questions that I wrote up because I wanted to learn too.
Great. Awesome.
So what is the definition of racism?
Yeah. So when I think about understanding the definition of racism, it starts with understanding and what race is, just the history of how race came to be. And race is classifying people based on their skin color, the physical attributions of it. And so the definition of racism is treating people differently because of the color of their skin, and having and understand that there's systems in place to maintain certain powers and people have privileges based on their race. So the goal is to fight racism, to realize the systems are in place to support it, and to have that humanity to say, you know what, like, we need to dismantle this because we're all connected as humans, and we need to have that humanity to look out for each other. So racism is just something that bothers me because it divides us. So that would be my definition.
Yeah, I agree with that. The dividing is not good.
Oh, my life has been so much better because I am connected to people of different races and backgrounds. My wife is white, and I'm African-American. And so learning about her culture, her upbringing, her background, and also having friends of different backgrounds is so awesome. So that's why for me, I'm like, man, whenever I see people push through and dismantle racism, like, it's awesome because now you're not missing out on connecting and knowing people of so many different backgrounds. Like, that's the awesome part of it. I find joy in having people and friends and family members of different backgrounds. So that's my ultimate goal of dismantling racism.
Yeah, that's what makes life fun, is just knowing different people. And I've really enjoyed it too.
Yeah.
Can you talk about what Black Lives Matter means? Some people don't understand that.
Yeah, and I'm glad you asked this question, because I know some folks, when they hear Black Lives Matter, they take it, sounds like, oh, like, well, why are you amplifying Black Lives Matter? Why not say all lives matter? And I think we have to be mindful that all lives do matter. All people matter. Every human matters. But and understand the historical pieces of it, in our country, all lives have not always mattered equally. We've had in our country times where systemically certain lives were valued more than others. Certain lives were able to vote and their votes counted fully. Certain people's lives were enslaved. They didn't have a choice of where they worked. They were brought here against their own will. So that saying Black Lives Matter shows that, you know what, we need to amplify the Black lives that are still experiencing a lot of harm and hurt and disparities, because those lives need additional care and support right now. And also for folks who struggle to understand Black Lives Matter, I really encourage you to have a conversation and be humble and have empathy and ask someone who says Black Lives Matter to share a few, some of the situations they've been in, some of the hurt they felt, because I think having that empathy and listening will help people say, oh, now I see why you feel it's important for us to say Black Lives Matter. So then you'd say, okay, now those are the struggles of reason and reasons why you're sharing this, because there's some real hurt there. And so that's what I feel around Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, and it's true. I've been learning a lot about it too, and I really appreciate you sharing that. You started these amazing webinars, and I've watched them. Can you talk about how that got started?
Yeah, webinars. Well, I shared earlier, I love having a background in communications, and I lead a team of school counselors in Minneapolis, and our team is amazing. I love our group. The best group of team members I've ever had. And working with the school counselor in Minneapolis, I wanted to send out updates for how to support students. And we're in distance learning, so I wasn't able to do the professional developments in person. So I was like, well, how about I have my notes for the ones I wanted to do. How about I just record it and send it out to my team? And so it started by recording professional development. And then from there moved into wanting to be timely, because I kept hearing from other counselors and counseling organizations that with COVID coming up and with the Ahmaud Arbery situation, and then with George Floyd, people were like, goodness, what do I do? How can I respond? And it helped to address some of that silence, because I know folks were like, I just need some guidance. I figured a way, and it's awesome using technology to say, well, how about we share these professional developments in the spaces where people need it? And so I was thankful to have the background and knowing how to present, and I love doing that kind of work and also hearing what counselors needed. So from there, I just listened to the needs of school counselors and put together some helpful tips so that you don't feel as stuck. You have a starting point.
Yeah, and they were very helpful. I think I saw you had people from all over the world, like thousands of people.
So. Yeah, super exciting. And that's the awesome part, is the feedback from folks saying like, yes, thank you. I did feel stuck. And I did that. For me, it was just listening, because I wanted to have the humility to say, how can I help other counselors who feel stuck? I've felt that before. So I'm glad that I've supported school counselors around the world.
Yeah, it's been amazing. And I love the gym analogy that you had shared on your last webinar. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So it's funny, because gyms just opened up here in Minnesota earlier this week. And I think being mindful of doing this race equity work, people are at all different levels of where they're at around it. Some people have been doing this. And as you think about the gym, going to work out, at the gym, you know, when you're at the gym, there's some people there, and this race equity work is like working out. Some people are there, and especially if you're from an underrepresented population, you've been doing these workouts. You're familiar with it. You're in shape. You're running millions of miles, and you're good. And some people, they're like, I just got a membership. I just learned about this. I just got the notice from my doctor that I need to work out. And that's the needs assessment, where you're like, whoa, based on what's going on, I just realized this is a blind spot for me. I need to start working out. And so we have to realize we have some people just get into the gym the first time. And we don't. And so I think it's important to offer grace to those folks, especially people who have been doing this race equity work. We can't get grumpy at them if they're like not lifting 100 pounds like we are, if they're only at 2, you know, because I think some people, imagine if you're sitting there working out and you're like, this is my first day at the gym and you're going to make me feel bad that I'm not lifting as much as you. We have to offer them grace and say, hey, I'm here to help you. Let me know if you want me to spot you, or hey, here's some lifts I've been doing to help get to this point. So I think that's how you give that support. But then also my friends who are new to the gym, it's important to, because, you know, sometimes people just get the membership and they just swipe in and then they leave and get their check.
They tell people they have a gym membership and they don't go.
I go to the gym. yeah, I go to the gym. But you're like, do you really go to the gym? Come on, be honest. Like, we see you just swiping, and then you're not doing the lifts. You're on your phone. You're watching the TV at the gym. So my folks who are new to the gym, I encourage you to start doing the workouts, baby steps. You don't have to jump to the highest weights yet. Build yourself up to it. That's the same way of doing this race equity work in school counseling. And use what you got already. You have some related skills. So if you already are good at doing empathy, you have that in you. You have these skills. Use some of that provision. If you know you're really good at connecting with students, start there. If you have humility, start there by saying, hey, students, all right. Like, if I have humility with students around dancing, I can't dance to save my life. And so I try to dance with the kids, and I go to them, I'm like, you guys, Mr. Francis cannot dance. But I know y'all like to dance. Help me understand. Help me with some of these moves. Having that humility to say, you know what, students, not only am I asking you to help me understand, but I'm going to be doing the work on my own to learn and get better and practice so that I can be there for you and build this connection. So I think it's so important that we have that humility if we're entering this work and it's new for us, instead of, because it can be hard. Folks can be like, well, I don't want to say the wrong thing, and I don't want to hurt anyone. And ask for that humility, ask for that grace, and say, hey, I'm trying and I don't want to say the wrong thing, students. So please let me know. A relationship we're building with them too.
Yeah, and I remember when I was in college and I got the freshman 15 is what they call it. And it was hard to go to the gym. So one of my friends tag teamed with me and held me accountable. And we went together for a while. Mm-hmm. And then once I got into it, I was fine. But I also think about, like, even those that are at the gym already and in shape, like, I'm always thinking, like, how can I get stronger? And I'll ask for tips on weights and stuff like that. So even with this work, I'm trying to continue to grow and get stronger. And I have friends that we started a book club where we're reading and learning about. It's actually by Kendi. It's called How to Be Anti-Racist.
Yeah. And
so just having like accountability, like even if you're already at the gym, it's really important.
I'm so glad you said that. Now you got me all excited. I just wanted to piggyback off of that because that's something I tend to share with counselors of color, because at no point should any of us as counselors feel like we've arrived, like, oh, I'm woke because I'm a person of color and I've experienced this. And so I think it's important for us to know, like, even me as a person of color, even as a person in this manager role, even though I'm leading these professional developments, I'm always working on my blind spots. And so even being aware during COVID, how am I supporting our Asian American students? They have been experiencing discrimination because of COVID-19 and Asian American. And so how am I learning more about what that discrimination feels like and learn about other groups who have been marginalized, not just thinking about African American people in our history, but how can I learn about other people who are experiencing these same hurts instead of just staying content? Like, oh, I get it for my folks, or I get how to do this work. I can always dig deeper and grow and understand how to support other populations.
Yeah, that's very true. Can you talk about going from ally to accomplice?
Yeah. I think it's important to think about it and making that transition. And I think there's a lot of folks where it is, it's easier to begin as an ally, because it's where you have, and especially I know some folks want to have the tools. Tell me what to do. And it feels, again, like a checklist where you're, okay, this race incident happened at school and I gave students some handouts about support. I posted on my social media that Black Lives Matter and we need to do better. And that's doing some ally work where you're, you know, doing some of that, like, yeah, like I'm standing with this. But I think moving to the position of being an accomplice means putting yourself in the work. How are you showing up and being alongside? How are you doing it with me? So not just telling students like, hey, there's some groups coming up that you should join. Maybe you need to host those groups, invite students into that space. You create the space for students to come and share what's going on. You initiate the conversation with your colleagues to say, hey, we need to talk about what's going on in the news. I want to make sure we're creating this space for our staff. Help me understand what's happening here and help me so that I can grow and support you all here. I think putting yourself in the work means being an accomplice. And then also, as you're moving forward with pushing work forward, be the one to say, you know what? I'm not going to say, yeah, we need to do more lessons and stuff like this around this work. You're going to actually say, you know what? Let's calendar it. Let's lead it. How can we bring people together to do this work and be in the work? So I think that's the position we have to move into, because then it helps shoulder the burdens for people of color. Because myself as a person of color, I get kind of, there's times where I get in my own head, like, am I doing too much? Are people going to think I'm like the angry black guy trying to bring up all these race issues? And so seeing accomplice with me where I'm like, oh, you brought that up. Thank you for having, for doing that. It feels, you feel like they move from just saying like you have a seat at the table or they're inviting you in. They're like, no, no, like I invite you to join. Like, I want to do it with you. We're a teammate, not just you be here and do the work. Like, I'm in it with you. We're doing the work. It feels like a partnership.
Yeah, you should create a Black Lives Matter accomplice sticker. I would totally put it up in my office.
That'd be fun. I haven't thought about that. I have a friend who's an artist. I'll ask him, because if anyone out there is an artist, I would love to connect. I think that's how we move this work forward and get the messaging out around how to do it.
Yeah. Can you talk about what does anti-racism school counseling mean to you?
Yeah. Oh, this is, and I'm learning, and I feel like I've been doing the work, but I'm learning the actual term. And so for me, what it looks like in school counseling, some of this are things I've done. I'll start with that. And then some of the things I dream of it looking like moving forward. So the things that I've done around anti-racism and school counseling is making sure that we have conversations and have lessons in our comprehensive school counseling plan to talk about race, to talk about racism, to talk about what it feels like, and talk about the history around it. I think we have to be mindful that we need to have space to have these conversations in school and to have students understand the systems that are in place that cause racism, but then also teach the skills to have students be in the position to dismantle it, call it out, address it, and have conversations when they see it. And so some of the lessons that I've done has been, for instance, during COVID-19, I created a lesson where I share with students the history of why people are discriminating against Asian Americans and the history of discrimination during pandemics. But then also talking about what it feels like for our Asian American folks. So you're including the empathy piece. And you're talking about, this is what racism looks like. Here's what it feels like for people experiencing it. And then I push students to share, how do you combat it? That's the anti-racist part, where you're saying, how can we have students learn the social-emotional skills to dismantle racism? And it is a social-emotional piece, because the way students, your race is your identity. And the way you've identified, that's a huge part of who you are. It impacts how you navigate the world socially and how you feel emotionally. So it falls on us as school counselors to do that social emotional work. And the anti-racist piece is showing students, here's how you can have conversations about race and support your friends of color and feeling like, in knowing that you don't want racism to keep going on. You're going to call it out. You're going to step up against the systems that are in place. You're going to have conversations with your other white peers and say, hey, that's not right to say that. I know people of color that don't really like hearing that, and it makes them feel bad, and I don't like the way that feels. Helping students develop that skill. And I think we as school counselors can help them, just like we tell them strategies for eliminating bullying. We need to do the same strategies for eliminating racism.
Yeah,
you gotta, so, I'm excited now. I'm like, I want to do the lesson.
I know, it's so true. I wish we were at school right now. We're on break.
I'll send you some of the lessons, because I get so pumped, because it's fun hearing students have the conversations. One of the most intense lessons I did this year was at Patrick Henry High School, and we talk about the power of words. And we had, sometimes what we know is, now I'm getting off topic, but I love this. This is my favorite lesson.
Go ahead, Derek. It's all right.
So students of color, I was having a conversation with them around, there's some students that were saying, like, they get upset or there's been fights because someone will post on social media like the N-word. Or they'll post other derogatory racist terms. And so I said, well, let's do a lesson about that. And so we did a lesson where we watched a video where someone on in the news media said to their co-host a really messed up derogatory term. And so I paused it there and we talked to students about, have you ever had an experience where someone said something racially insensitive to you? How did it feel? How did you want to react? How did you react? And help them understand the thought process when you have race incidents happen. And so also in that moment, showing about how do you handle it? If you're someone who caused that hurt, how do you say, you know what? I made a mistake. I'm sorry. I need to tell you sorry. So it teaches students how to work through race incidents. And I think that's part of doing anti-racism work. You have to teach kids how to handle when you have race incidents come up. We have incidents come up around race all the time because we're starting to figure this out, how to blend it and really integrate as a country. And so we have to offer people grace when they mess up. I've messed up before. And so we have to teach people how to say, you know what, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that. That was really insensitive. And we need to be mindful and say, hey, I'm going to do better. So I really think that's all a part of doing this anti-racist work.
Yeah, I would love to see the lesson. So please email it to me. I'll send you a reminder.
Hello.
Can you talk about code switch?
Yeah. Code switching. Oh, yeah. I didn't see that question there. I'm glad it is. Because code switching is one of those things that that is really unique. And I have a conversation. Oh, I think I'm pretty sure I have a lesson on that, too. I'm that kind of like, I love every like conversations with students. I love turning into lessons, so it could be bigger conversations. But code switching is that dualness. That dualness as a person of color to know how to navigate society, especially predominantly white spaces, knowing and even for me, my students when I'm in school, they'll call me out for code switching, because if it's a student of color and they come up to me and shake my hand, it's like that, and we come in and we do the hug and we do the what's up. But and then if it's a staff member that's usually white, they'll be like, oh, you shook his hand like that, and you nodded down. And just picking up on those types of things around understanding the environment you're in. And people of color, it's like a second, a sixth sense for us. We just have to have that awareness of what space am I in? How will the way I sound come off? How will my actions, the way I'm dressed, come off? And so code switching is that dualness of being able to be a chameleon and navigate both all social settings. The other thing I want to be mindful of, though, with code switching, because I'm one of those people who I'm starting to get kind of more like boundary pushing. I know some people are like, so for me, I try to maintain my authenticity. Like, at schools where I can wear a hat, I'll wear my hat because I feel like that's the way students connect with me. Or I'll wear my earrings. Or if I have a chain, I'll wear my chain because I want students to see me and be like, oh, I can connect with him. He doesn't have to code switch to connect to me. And so when I go to school, I try to dress comfortably, dress casual, because I don't want that to be a divide. We're students like, oh, he's code switching. And I think part of me, it's just I want students to be able to see someone who looks like me and looks like them and be like, oh, you do have a position in education and I can do that too. It makes that mirror where like, oh, I like your shoes. Like, oh, and you're a school counselor? That's cool. So then they feel like they see that mirror. Like, I could do that. He looks like me. He likes the things I like. So I think that's the piece of code switching I try to be mindful of, is that I'm staying true to myself so that students see that someone that looks like them, dresses like them, sounds like them, eats the same stuff they like, can do this kind of professional role.
Yeah, that's so true. And then plus that makes them feel comfortable and then they want to talk to you.
Yes, definitely.
How can school counselors prepare kids for adult negativity and ignorance?
Yeah, that is one of the things that I really think that school counselors, we're in the driver's seat around this, because we have to be mindful of where students are getting their messaging from. And it's a combination of sometimes at home getting negative messaging around certain things, and also news media, what they're watching on the news, what they're seeing on social media. So that creates the ignorance, that creates the unknowing about people of different backgrounds. So if students see that in adults and in their peers, I think it's important for us to teach them how to show real human connection, how to understand people who look different than them, their background, their likes, ask questions, build a friendship, because we all have a little bit of that bias in us, and especially adults and older folks, if you haven't done that work, it can be really deep, but I think it could also be damaging because you're mirroring negative behaviors to kids. And so I think it's important for adults to listen and have kids speak up and share and help teach the older generation. I know sometimes people give older folks a pass where they'll say, oh, they're from a different generation. They're older. You don't want, they don't get it. And I don't buy that, because I'm like, they're using a smartphone. They're driving in a car. They're not riding around in a horse and buggy. They knew how to adapt to that. They're not eating over like they're adapting in areas, because it takes practice and realizing how to do that work. So I love people that are older generation, but I really do feel they need to do the work. And I recognize it's harder because they haven't had the space to do that as often as the younger folks.
Yeah, that's true. Is there a special way or a tactic you were thinking of or have thought of to engage kids in the conversation? And how do you prepare to answer their tough questions?
Yeah, I think to engage kids in the conversation around race, it's in some of these tough conversations, I really do think it starts at an early age. The reason I share that is because kids are able, and now we're getting into the development piece, kids are able to recognize skin color differences as early as 6 months. So they're doing that categorizing and putting things into place and noticing male and female and attributing characters and beliefs to things. By 3 years old, they can have bias. And so if they're growing and learning and categorizing and blending in that bias, I think it's important to start at an early age having those open conversations from the first time when a kid says, well, I don't want to play with that person. Their skin looks dirty. Or if they're like, you know what? When they get to choose their friends they play with, if they're choosing people that look more like them. So helping kids understand from an early age some of those biases that we all have naturally as humans. And I think if you start at an early age and teach those skills to combat it, and if you do that in school, in kindergarten, first, second, third, fourth grade, as they get older, they realize and fight those negative messagings they hear, and they can actually see it as a learning process. Learn how to see the person who has a different cultural background. They'll be like, oh yeah, we did an activity in school where we had our Somali students share, and I learned and I asked questions about their culture, about what holidays they celebrate, and about food and traditions. And then I get to ask questions, then I got to share about mine. So then we learn about others and we appreciate their background. And then we see it as, hey, thank you for teaching me about your culture. I know more now instead of assuming. So I think that's how we help with people learning how to have race conversations, and the offering grace when we mess up and saying, you know what, I want to correct you on something that you shared. And I want you to know that what you said was really insensitive. Here's why. And share with them, like, this is the thing you said is what's really hurtful. Not saying you're a mean, racist person. I just want you to know the words you said, that can really hurt a lot of people. So that's teaching social emotional learning, how to share with someone when you're hurt, and social emotional learning goes into how you're impacting others around you, how you're impacting the community and their feelings. So that's how you really get into, and I think that's part of anti-racist work, is teaching how to bring the community together.
Yeah, that's so true. Is that in a school that has no diversity, they may think there is no problem. How do you start the conversation with a white group of kids?
Yeah, I think it's really important that school counselors in whatever area you're in, educators, have the conversation about race. Because I think sometimes even more when you're in a space where it's predominantly one racial background, or and not a lot of people and experiences from different backgrounds, because then it's easier to be in the pattern of just understanding people who look like you, have your in-group bias. So I think it's even more important that as predominantly white areas, you start that conversation, because historically, that's been a hard thing to do for white families. I know even my wife's family, they'll mention, like, you know, we didn't really talk about it. Or like when kids bring up race, they're like, shh, don't bring that up. So I think it's important to teach about what racism looks like and where it comes from and the history around it, because then I feel also that's a college and career readiness skill. Your life is not going to be predominantly white setting your whole life, your whole school. So we want to make sure that you're able to have empathy and understanding when someone of a different background tells you something hurt, or words that you said hurt, or actions. So I think it's important, because imagine your freshman year, if you went to an all white school and you don't realize the hurtful or negative messaging that you may have received about people of color, and you walk into your college dorm room and or down the hall, you see there's your neighbor is a person of color, and you're like, and so now you want to be you're in a better place to build a relationship with them and avoid those errors, because we see that so many times where students will post things on social media that's really racially charged, and we see it on the news all the time. That's because they don't usually have a relationship with someone of a different background. I learned about their background. So I think that's how we heal our country. People have more of an understanding if they build relationships with people cross-culturally, but also learn about their cultures. If you're not in that area, learn about it actively so that you can have that humility to say, I know what hurts, and I want to make sure that I'm hearing you so I don't cause that same hurt. That's humanity.
Yeah, it's so important to be a lifelong learner. That's really important in our work. Can you talk about appropriate and inappropriate ways to advocate?
Yeah. And when you say advocate, are you thinking advocate for doing anti-racist work, or advocate for school counseling? I want to make sure I address it head on.
I believe the question was how to advocate for anti-racism, because I know a lot of people want to help. And so sometimes before they think, they tend to advocate in inappropriate ways. So just making sure they're all doing their work and helping out in the best way we can.
Yeah. I think for doing the advocating kind of work, it begins with being mindful yourself. Like, where am I at on this? How can I make sure that I'm growing in myself and humility to do this work? And then I think having people that you know are accomplices with you, are people that are in your building where you're like, okay, I can tell this is a passion of someone else here. And hopefully your school and your school district leadership team has that as a statement, as a anchor in their development of their counseling program. So as you're doing, and I'm getting ASCA on you guys, but as you're doing your foundation, you know, your beginning of your ASCA, make sure you're putting it in your mission and vision that you want to support students of all different backgrounds, that equity is an important factor, because then when you're doing that proactive work of talking about the things you're going to do, it ties right into your vision and mission. So then also making sure that you're sharing that with your leadership. So when you do your counselor principal agreement, you say, hey, this is a priority of ours, and it's part of our district's mission and our counseling department's mission to do more intentional work around equity. And so these are the things we're going to do this year to address it head on. And so that way, you know, if your district has it out there, your department has it, you are taking that initiative and you have the backing. And so it can be uncomfortable, but letting them know, hey, I know that some of this is new and might be uncomfortable for some folks, but I really want to do the work. I want to be proactive in it. And so I think it really starts with doing that, but then also being intentional about having it a part of your comprehensive school counseling plan. So showing how race equity is impacting students. Your work can impact students with academically, social emotionally, and college and career readiness. And then also use your delivery systems. Make sure that you're doing classroom lessons. Make sure you're creating small groups and you're intentional about your individual counseling sessions to do this work. So that's the way I think as school counselors, we can really get started, by staying true to our ASCA foundation.
Sometimes people of color are judged with being too dark or not dark enough. How can a person of color overcome this obstacle?
Yeah. Oh, man. That's that colorism. And I'd want to tell if any person of color is listening or any human, your skin is beautiful. It was made intentionally like that. It's gorgeous. Whatever complexion you have, if you're super dark, love that dark beauty. Enjoy it. Embrace it. If you're a lighter skinned person, love that too. Both are equally beautiful. And I think it's so messed up in our world that in our country that the closer to being light or white, the more privileged or socially acceptable that is. That's really messed up. And that can mess with people's psychology. You have people talking about light skin versus dark skin. And it's like, why do that in group discrimination and bias? Why not say we're all having beautiful skin and understand that what it's about the heart, the inside, and you lose out on opportunities to grow closer to people when you put up those kind of barriers. And then also understanding my wife and I were having this conversation where I told her, I was like, how does this work? Because being lighter skin for white people, if you're more fair skinned or not as tan, it's seen as, oh, like, you want to have a tan. And so then when is it, where's the line where, like, if you're a white person, you get a tan, it's like, ooh, that's attractive, that's a nice tan. When is it, like, too tan, where it's like, oh, you're getting a little too dark? Because that's the part where this colorism, like, I don't get it. Because it's made up by us as humans. And it goes back to racism. That's just another form of racism that we have to stop, because your skin color doesn't make you a better person, a more attractive person, a kinder person, a better heart. And so we need to teach some of those skills of that your color of your skin doesn't make you better than anyone. That's not love. That's a condition. One color, that condition, now I only love someone based on the condition of their skin. That's not unconditional love. And that's what we want to strive for as people.
Yeah, I have some distant cousins in Mexico, and you might think, like, oh, well, they're not from Mexico because they have white skin, blonde hair, blue eyes. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people might judge them on that. So, I mean, this is very, very helpful. And I appreciate you saying that. Because mm-hmm. I think no matter what color your skin is, it is beautiful. And people need to own that.
Yes. Yeah. And then I think part of doing the anti-racism work is talking about colorism. Because I know growing up, I'm a darker skinned person, I think. I don't know. Like, I think I'm me. I like the color of my skin. It's chocolatey. So, I'll just say I'm Godiva. That's what, if someone's going to pick, I'm like a Godiva milk chocolate. And so I think it's important to talk to kids about that, because I think some, especially darker skinned women, sometimes get that messaging that lighter skinned women and their other features and the hair is what's attractive and that they need to strive to that. And that can be really damaging emotionally. So I think it's important as we're doing that development and identity piece of self, of understanding your self-worth, is realizing whatever tone you are, it's beautiful. And I think that's not always the messaging that some of our young adults hear.
How do school counselors deal with being the only advocate for Black lives in their school?
Yeah, and that can be challenging. And so I know over the past couple of weeks, I've heard that from school counselors across the country, where they're like, I'm the only one here doing that work. I'm struggling. It's hard. Admin's pushing back. I think it's really important to, first of all, come back to the gym analogy, too. Some folks maybe just got their membership. Some folks haven't even got their membership. And so I think being able to connect with people who are interested in doing the work. And if you come to a point, and I've been there, where I feel like I know I'm the only one on my team, on my department doing the work, then what I start to do is do the work with as many students as I can. So for instance, what I would do is, even if a student wasn't on my caseload, students of color just knew, like, hey, Mr. Francis, can I connect with you? Yes. Or I'd go and I'd reach out and be in the hallways, because I was at schools that experienced major racial incidents. And then the students of color would be coming to me, even though they weren't on my caseload. And so I think that's the way to still do the work. Even though there's boundaries, that doesn't mean they can limit you from which kids you can connect with. If you have a connection with kids, connect with them because they still need that support. So oftentimes, as the few, one of the few people of color in buildings, I would find myself supporting students that weren't on my caseload. And that's what we do. That's how you do the work. And then also, if there are any people in other departments, anyone that wants to do the work, it doesn't have to be a person of color, but if it is, awesome. You bring them in and say, hey, if you have kids in your class, or hey, let me know if I can come by your class and talk and do some of this work, or how can I partner with you in your social studies class? And I've done that in schools where I'm like, hey, in your social studies class, let me know if you want me to bring up some stuff or we can partner on some things. I think find ways to connect with whoever wants to do the work. How can you align it with the work they're doing? Even math, there's a math teacher at Champlain Park where she did a math assignment around the racial wealth gap. And she was like, I want to do an equity lesson. And I can share that too, because that lesson is amazing. And I came in there and I talked about my experience with race and my family's background with accumulating wealth and what it looks like. And then she shared about her family and how she has generational wealth. And that's how you do the work. That's how you partner with people. She's a math teacher, but she created space in her curriculum for us to do this work. So I think we got to get a little creative, reimagine what school counseling looks like. That's how you can do a classroom lesson. And then she was talking about kids I never knew wanted to talk about race. I'm opening that opportunity where she was like, kids are coming and they want to follow up about that, or they talk to their parents about it. So that's just creating those opportunities. They're there and everything.
Yeah, I love that because it really is a team approach on your campus. And it should be that way.
Definitely.
How can we address fatigue with Black educators and students during this time? I know it's got to be exhausting.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. That is so true. That is one of the things that we have to be mindful of, because this is emotionally hard, and understanding how trauma works for a lot of people of color. I can't speak for all. This isn't the first time we've seen race incidents that really trigger us. For me, here in Minnesota, we've had this happen at the macro level where it's with police or law enforcement, like Philando Castile, Jamar Clark. It goes on here, but then also in our schools. I've been in schools that have had major race incidents where a student posts something and it makes it to social media and it hits the news. And so it brought back all those triggers for me. So it's important that we take care of ourselves. You have to find some affinity spaces where you have other colleagues colleagues to support you. It can be colleagues of color, or it could be just colleagues that you know you trust. But I think it's important to find those spaces, those people that can carry it with you, because it gets hard. And if you keep it in, especially if you're in a school environment, it's going to get harder, because if you're on a team and people still don't understand or bring it up, it can be really hurtful. So it's important to just find people to support you and create those spaces for students so that they don't have to carry the burden by themselves.
Now, we're talking about police. One of our listeners wanted to know, what atmosphere does a police presence on a school campus bring, and what ways does it negatively impact students of color?
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because for me, growing up, I didn't meet a police officer that I knew and was cool with until I started working at North High in Minneapolis. And he was the school resource officer there and the football coach. And so I think it comes back to the relationships. I had really negative views and relationships with police officers prior to my time working in a school that had a police officer. Also, the police officer in our school, he's amazing. He is the best school officer I've ever seen. He coaches the football team. Kids love and adore him. He's from the community. And so he has that natural built-in trust. So that's the beauty of having a police officer like him. He helped me as an adult build my trust in the police. I think that's something the police departments have to do. They need to do that work, because right now there's a lot of distrust with law enforcement. And I understand that pain that kids have. So what I share with them is, how can we get them connected with positive police enforcement? And I think that's one of the biggest next steps Minneapolis has to do, because right now the whole world has watched a Minneapolis police officer put his knee on someone's neck for 8.5 minutes. That's you got to build the trust back from that. And it's going to have to be intentional. And you can't blame people and kids for feeling that hurt. What I hope is that that people of color have hopefully had some positive experiences with law enforcement so that they can give some grace. And it's hard because I know it's easier to just be like, no, forget the police, defund the police. And I understand where people are coming with for some of that. They do need to do some more work with police, and especially around understanding how to handle and address people from different backgrounds, and how to not their tactics for how they apprehend folks. So I think that's the work that needs to be done on both sides.
How can school counselors hold each other accountable regarding implicit bias when working with students of color and other marginalized student populations?
Yeah, I think that is another huge team relationship piece. And I think it starts with your team making that agreement early in the year as a team that you have that sacred space where you're like, hey, as a team, we have to trust each other. And if you have someone on your team that's going to lead and guide around this, you have to have a space to have those conversations. Where I've seen it work well is where you have the agreement, we're going to work on these skills and have the training around it. So showing up to training around race and bias. Sometimes there's folks who intentionally don't show up to those trainings because they're uncomfortable or they plan to be off that day. You have to make your team commit to wanting to be aware of their biases. And then also, as you're working as a counseling team, have that openness to say, hey, I want to share this with you all. I want to make sure that I'm running it by you. I think I might have bias in that situation. And I had to do that with my team. And it's humbling because I'm just going to be real with you guys. Because I think it's so much easier to just be real. My bias that I used to struggle with is when we had white families that adopted students of color. I don't know where I get it from. And I think I don't. In my mind, I'd be like, why did they adopt a black kid? Like, why? What do they think they're doing? They think they're just saving that kid's life? Who are they? Are they raising the kid to see and understand the racial components of their life? And so I had that bias. And so when we had families come in, there's times where I'm probably sure I made mistakes where I didn't, where I might have been biased. And that's where I had to own it. I told my team, I was like, you guys, I need to work on this. And I did. And the cool part is the way I did it was I was at church one week and there's a little kid of color running and crying. And the kid went over to her mom, and her mom was white, and she hugged her mom and stopped crying when her mom picked her up. And she was like, mommy, mommy. And I was just like, oh, that kid doesn't see color. That kid sees mom. Who am I to sit here with my bias because that white mom adopted a black girl? That's my mess I had to clean up. And from that point, I was like, that girl felt love. She didn't. And who am I? And so I think we have to do that kind of audit of ourselves ongoing to say, hey, I have some bias I got to work on, you know?
Yeah. And that's so true. Each other
accountable. Yeah.
Yeah. And I know in California, a lot of lawmakers have been working hard to make ethnic studies courses a high school requirement. And some districts are already doing that. To your knowledge, are any schools in Minnesota mandating this as well as beyond just an elective? If so, what are your thoughts on the possibility of classes like this in the fight against racism in America?
Yeah, I think it's awesome that schools are doing that out in California. And we do have that going on here in Minnesota. As of right now, it is an elective. I'm pretty sure, yeah, it's only an elective for right now. I think it'd be ideal to get it to count for social studies. I think, try and make sure I'm getting this right. So nonetheless, making sure that those classes are available, I think is awesome. In my opinion, definitely make it a required class. The reason I say that is because those courses are really helpful in two ways. One way, it's empowering for students of color to see that their history is being taught. I think it's so important that's how you build your belief and your validation, who you are, seeing pieces of your history brought up and shared, and seeing people in history books that look like you that were doing great things, not just being enslaved. And I think that's important for all students to realize, how do you do the combative work? How do we be honest about the history of discrimination and racism and say, hey, that was in the past. The laws have changed. But how are we seeing some of these things still today? Because we agree in the past it was wrong, and that's why the laws have changed. But how are we making it different now? How are we seeing some of those same things happen in the past? And how can we learn from that and treat people differently and change some of the structural pieces that are still in place that are causing these same problems from the past? So I think it helps with kids understanding and having a frame of reference for how to move forward and say, hey, have things really changed? What has changed and what things haven't? And what parts can we do in our school and our community to make it better?
Yeah, I would love to see that happen, especially statewide. That would be amazing.
Yes, for sure.
How can we support Black communities over the summer?
Yeah. I think it's important the way to support Black communities, I think being mindful first of, and this is of, making sure that taking care of yourselves, your soul, your family, making sure that you, because that's what we need as humans, is that initial safety, that feeling of being loved. I think it's really important that we make sure that the basic needs are met. So if it's food services, if it's emotional services, make sure that is addressed. I know some students, it's going to be hard during COVID to figure out meals. So making sure those structural things are in place is going to be huge. And I think as school counselors, checking in, seeing how your students are doing. If there's community events going on, go there safely with your mask on and make sure you're like, hey, like I came, and the visibility, students will see that. So I think building that relationship with your families of color, your Black families, but then also to the Black families out there, I think if we're going to be really intentional about supporting ourselves, lifting our community, and doing real Black Lives Matter, we need to do it consistently. We have to make sure we're educating ourselves. We need to make sure that when we're in school, we're encouraging each other and saying, hey, let's, and because I love having peers of color that will say, hey, I'm holding you accountable. I'm there with you. Pass your classes, man. But did you do your homework? I think we have to make sure we see Black Lives Mattering as doing that kind of accountability work to say, I know you're smart, and build each other up, not just show up when we have negative things happen to us, but see it as an actual movement where you're encouraging people and you're saying, hey, I heard that you need a job. How can I help you find a job for this summer? How can I help you find an internship? How can I help you with a college application this summer? What resume things you can do over the summer? That's how you improve yourself too. And not, we can't sit and just say, oh, things are happening to us. We're in a position where we can go ahead and fill out applications, do enrichment stuff so that you're ready for when school starts. You're going to be 5 months out of being in the classroom. Make sure you're picking up a book or reading over the summer.
What is your why for this work, and what makes you strong?
Yeah. My why for this work. I have a faith base where I feel called to just love people of all backgrounds and try to just share that messaging, because I feel that really helps with bringing people together. I love racial reconciliation. I've seen how beautiful it is in my own life, in my own family. And I realized that we don't have to be stuck in the hurt of all the pain from race in our country, in our world. And so I see also the presence I have and the impact I can make when I walk into a school or I connect with colleagues to openly share about my life, but also share strategies so that we can connect. So that's my why. I feel really passionate about seeing people in community and having just doing life together, different backgrounds, and feeling encouraged about who they are. And for me, the most beautiful thing is seeing those cross-cultural relationships where I'm like, historically, those things were banned, and we're showing that love is above that and conquering it and connected. Like, I'm like, yes, we're winning. That's what I want that to win. That's my goal, is that there's a day where we don't have to teach about anti-racist work, where it's just the norm, where it happens automatically, where people just say, hey, let's call this system out. Let's work on it. How do you feel? I want that. That's the day I'm pushing for. And I hope there's a day where I'm like, oh, no way. It's happening in schools across the country. Like, it's a given. I'd love to be able to see that one day.
Yeah, where love is greater than hate.
Yes.
That'd be awesome. Is there anything else you would like our listeners to know?
I'd say I'm glad that, especially school counselors, awesome that you're getting into this profession. It is the best job. I don't even see it as a job. This is like fun for me. This is it's a blast. And so that's what makes it enjoyable. We have such a huge role that we can play in transforming lives. And I think seeing it like that, and when you have roadblocks come up, see it as an opportunity. So right now, if you're struggling with navigating race and these conversations make you uncomfortable, see it as an opportunity to grow, because it could be happening on purpose where there's a day where you're leading students and sharing with them, like, you know what, it was hard for me, and here's some things that I did. So you never know how this can be an opportunity where one day you're leading conversations at a school around race, and you're sharing transparently, like, oh, I felt some of that when I was starting this work. So understand we're all at different places and doing this work, and offer yourself some grace.
At the end of our podcast, we like to do the Sunshine Spotlight. Can you name at least one thing that made you happy this week?
Yeah, one thing that made me happy this week, I would say knowing I got a email from a school district, and the counseling lead for that district shared that they were so glad to have proactive resources to support students. They were super happy because they're like, we did not know what to do or say. We just needed a starting place. So they were talking about the feedback they got from students because of the spaces they held for students to talk about how they've been feeling with George Floyd's death. And that made me so excited. They were talking about how students were, they didn't know. They're like, so many students are reaching out that we didn't know that they'd have this type of response. So that was like the best. Because if I was in a school and students were responding like that, I'd be giddy. I'd be like, yeah, like, you guys want to do it again? Like, let's do another group next week. So that's the kind of stuff that made my week amazing. Like just hearing folks that are having some momentum moving forward in this work.
Yeah, I have to agree. And I'm torn between two for this week. I taught my first class last night at the University of Laverne, and the opening was about Reach Higher, the Reach Higher Initiative. Yeah. And I was just so excited to share about our work that we've been doing at my school. And then I told them about you and like teaching about anti-racism. I want to make sure that they understand. And I'm co-teaching with another counselor. Her name's Alexis Godar, and she's amazing. So talking with you is just, it's been amazing, and it's been really encouraging. And I appreciate all your work. So continue it and keep doing the great work you're doing. And you're inspiring a ton of people across the world. So Derek, if you could just say goodbye to everyone out there listening.
Hey, thanks for that. Thanks for having me. Thanks for checking us out. Bye to everyone out there. I hope to connect with y'all soon, and have a good, productive, safe, healthy summer.
Thank you for tuning in to Reach Higher Riverside. You can follow us on Twitter at RH Riverside. You can subscribe to our YouTube channel at Reach Higher Riverside. You can also subscribe to our iTunes or Google Play Music and give us a rating. Thank you so much for listening in. We appreciate all of you tuning in. And as Michelle Obama would say, when they go low, we reach higher.